You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
It's a good show.
Okay. Do we want to wait till an organic NYU public radio style cold open happens?
I think we've established by now that we never do a good cold open.
Okay, well, that's our cold open. Here's our traditional theme song. Waiting longs is easy when you have friends. That sounded racist. This song should end. Ta-da! I'm obsessed with this. I really want to have a good cold open. I mean, I want to have hip cold opens, like where we sound like we're NPR kind of people.
Well, it would just take in literally any amount of forethought.
Yeah. You know? More organic. Like it's like we're settling in, and then there's like some crazy fragment of conversation happening, and then we all laugh, and then it goes into the theme song.
All right, we'll shoot for that for next time. Yeah. But this time...
Yeah. We could write a couple and then try them out in like 2 or 3 days.
Or you could try like that thing where it's like based on what the episode's about. So like it's like, was everybody kung fu fighting? Boom! Sting! There it is.
That's far too much extra work.
We could all try to sing the Ching Chong music.
What?
What is that?
What's that? You know,
duck, duck, duck,
duck.
Oh, that's what you call it.
The opening intro to I Think I'm Turning Japanese.
Correct.
First of all, we should introduce our guests.
Oh, yes. Let's introduce our guests first. We have Andrew T, the host of Yo, Is This Racist, the podcast.
That's correct.
And then we have Iffy, whose last name I... Oh.
Yeah, the N is silent. That's the trick.
Wadaway.
Yeah.
Iffy Wadaway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Is that racist to say that his name sounds cool?
I feel like that's one of those ones that has like such an obvious line of like, that's fine, but like you get like, I feel like there's like a 3 strikes policy on like how much you have to be like, so tell me where you're really from kind of jam.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other conversation.
Well, I've really been, since we started this podcast, you know how when you hear the word, you hear a certain word and then it seems like you hear it all the time because you just learn the word. Like this concept of the conversation that ensues when about where white people are saying like, but where are your parents from or that whole thing. Like I'm like hypersensitive to that now because I this is the first conversation we had on this podcast, even though I already knew you. and now I'm like seeing Asian people say like they dread the conversation, you know, like all stuff, and I still don't fully understand it. But not to monopolize the conversation.
I mean, we could.
I think we all kind of get that. I mean, it's weirdly kind of uniquely Asian, in a way because. It's a way of saying, like, well, obviously you don't belong here.
It's like, they're saying, like, how far off the boat are you?
Well, it's just that no matter what, the underlying tone of it is, like, you're not as American as me. You're from somewhere else.
Yeah. Right.
You're other. You're not the same as me, and I want to like get to the pinpoint. That's all I can focus on right now.
Which is not something I ask black people by default.
Exactly.
I don't go like, what are you, third generation?
Yeah.
But also, you know that like deep down somewhere you're like, well, most black people don't maybe know where they're from.
Right.
Yeah.
You mean in America at least?
That's what I was going to say. Everyone has their like own flavor. Like, I feel like the Asian community has privilege, is the thing.
Yeah. That's our big like thing that bugs us.
Yeah, all Latinos
like,
get
and nice.
all Latinos get like just assumed to be Mexican.
Yeah.
Or like, I feel like it's also regional because I feel like in New York, no one's like, everyone's Mexican. They're like, everyone's Puerto Rican.
Yeah, totally. Oh. So what's extra annoying about like being Asian, being asked like where are you from, is even if you say like, oh, I, like say you're born
and
you
and raised. Say you say Brooklyn, then you
yeah,
know
like Andrew is born and raised in Michigan, well, and like
Michigan.
And when he says Michigan,
around the
yeah.
fewest Asian people,
yeah. but when he says Michigan, they're like, okay, but like, where are you really from? And it's like, no, that was the answer to your question. He's from Michigan, but and then it's like, well, where? Because then they some of them might be like, where were you born? It's like fucking Michigan,
yeah.
And then they're like, okay, but where are you really from? Like, really, I'm from. You know what I mean? It's like not even. It's not letting it go either when you right. answer their question.
So let me ask as a white person, because you and I have said on this podcast that, you know, you're on the same page as me. It's like the idea of you know, oh, race doesn't exist and pretending it does. It's like we're not in favor of that. Like, but as a white person, when you meet an Asian person, if you are you supposed to just suppress that stupid? Is it just a dumb curiosity to have? Like, I wonder if your ancestry is like yeah. like tell me a country so I can. So I can start to have a conversation about something, or is that all just like
yeah,
put that away because
like,
you don't yeah. ask that about yeah. like European people?
Well, it's just more like, why can't you focus on having a conversation with this person without yeah. knowing?
Can't we talk about the coffee?
Like, yeah, exactly. Because it's different if you're friends and you just yeah. want to know more about your friend.
It's probably like wait, yeah, because yeah. if you're white, when you meet a white person, it's probably a good 3 or 5 conversations deep into a friendship
yeah.
before
yeah.
you're finding out they're Irish or
yeah.
Italian or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I will let you know.
Yeah.
I'm Chinese when it's time. Like, you, no one, if you're ever asking me and you don't know, it's because I don't care for you to know.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not hiding it, but I'm just like, I don't care about you enough
yeah.
for that to be a thing.
It's kind of like asking yeah. if someone's Jewish or, you know, it's like or gay for that matter.
Yeah.
Like it's sort of like it's a little I'm now learning this and I'm making this new decision in my white brain. These are matters that are private. This is part of the person's narrative. It's like or their horoscope sign. It's like it's not a conversational thing. Or maybe what I should say is it's not like your horoscope sign.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
benign because it
right.
doesn't really mean anything.
Well, but
yeah.
it's also a thing where everyone can be acting in like good faith, right? Like as a white person who doesn't think about shit that much, you could easily be like, "Well, I was just curious." And that's totally reasonable.
Right,
like it's totally reasonable, but it's also like when I get testy about it, it's because maybe there was a time when it wasn't reasonable or it wasn't someone
right.
yeah. I, you know.
Yeah, and also a lifetime of that, of being reminded constantly that
yeah.
as soon as white people look at you, they're like, well, you don't really belong in this. You're not
yeah.
really American. You're not really like me, you know. And it's really this, like, lifetime buildup of being othered by people. And so that's why you're more sensitive to it, you
right,
know.
Right, right.
And Gao is straight up a communist spy, but
yeah.
even she.
Here's the thing. This is what sucks for me is that like I would love to be able to be like I was born here just
right.
to have that, just to be able to give that answer, you know. But like, because they can only pull on that thread for so long before I have to say like I was born in China.
I
don't have that like Trump card to
yeah.
like.
I love that I can just call her Chinese.
Yeah.
It feels so racist,
yeah.
but it's like. Technically true. It's like calling a
yeah.
female dog a bitch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just like saying a naughty word. My Chinese friend, you're so Chinese.
here's a pro tip for our listeners out there. You can ask black people where they're from all the time, because we're either going to give you a gang or like you'll get an iffy who's like Nigerian.
I guess at this point we should point out that iffy is black.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Oh, man. That is one of the things where like I didn't realize I had a quote-unquote white voice, but sometimes I'm a gamer, y'all. I play video games, and so I play way too much. I have a clan, and so like when I'll stream on Twitch, some guys will come and be like, "Whoa, you're black," and I was like, "You couldn't tell? You couldn't tell by my thug-ass voice?"
He said DBZ before the recording.
Oh yeah,
and
what?
I was like,
"Oh,
what does that
that's
mean?"
That's so nerdy. I had to think in my head.
Wait, you don't know what DBZ is?
No.
Dragon Ball Z.
Oh
yeah.
Boy. I've never heard that. I've never heard of it referred to as DBZ.
What? That's the old. That's the shorthand.
That's the shorthand.
I feel like Iffy is my blackest friend who's most into anime, which I think is relevant.
Which means I'm probably also the most problematic. Like anime black dudes are definitely like,
oh, such a thing.
Oh
it's
yeah,
such
you're
a
gonna,
thing.
That's when you're gonna be able to snipe back, is all these anime black dudes who I had to like look at and be like, oh.
We all have our communities. That's yeah, important.
Like,
that's
for real, I was,
thing.
When I was taking Japanese my first year
oh,
of
boy.
College. Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
And, like, at the end of my first class, it was, like, a group of, like, black and white people who, like, they were in a circle and was like, don't you wish that you were Japanese? And I was like, nah, son. I love being black. Like, I could dunk? No, I can't. I mean, anybody could dunk on a short yeah. enough court. I want dunk.
What made you want to learn Japanese? I mean, I already know the answer, but I want to hear you say it.
Oh, you want to hear me say it?
Yeah. This is the
because
cold open
I wanted to watch yeah. animes without waiting for the subtitles.
Oh, my God. Mm. That's yeah. so nerdy. That's yeah. so nerdy.
Oh, yeah. No, I had big Japanese dreams. Like I was
big
so,
Japanese dreams. I think that's the title of it.
Big Japanese dreams.
Oh,
I took a semester of Japanese in college because my dad owned a company and I didn't know what I was going to do for a living. And back then, Japan was the country
oh,
that
yeah.
was going to buy
oh,
everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I wanted to learn how to say, no, I think it's worth more than that.
Yeah.
That's called leverage.
Wait, how old were you when you did this?
27. No, okay. I don't know why that's funny. I was 18.
You were, well, because it's like you were so young, but you were already planning for like.
I mean,
American economic collapse.
Like I wasn't like that wasn't like my total.
Right, but it seemed like the most useful thing.
I thought, you know, I guess I was a nerd. It was the 80s. I was familiar enough with William Gibson and stuff to feel and Blade Runner that I felt like I was like, what language should I take? I'm gonna be practical now. I'm not bound to the romance languages that my high school offers. Like I could take anything, and I was like, I'm gonna. When I'm 35, I'm gonna be Harrison Ford in Blade Runner. I should be able to speak Japanese.
Yeah.
In future Hong Kong.
Los Angeles Lamento. Whatever, you know, the post quake Neotropolis.
Well, we'll need to like negotiate with that dude for how much our eyes are gonna cost. So, I mean, we all need Japanese for that reason.
Yeah.
Thing. Oh. New eyes.
Okay, so people have asked. Actually, I think only one person had asked that we cover the topic of Asian appropriation of Black culture, which is like a big thing.
Yeah. Is it though? But yeah. Oh, it's worth asking,
you know what?
Is it,
what?
Though?
As soon as you get off a podcast called Yo, Is This Racist? You think you can be the racist one?
Yeah. I need some place to stretch my legs, you know?
You got to reflex that racist muscle that you
gotta
got.
I got to use it somewhere.
I'm so excited to just eat some popcorn and watch these people of color battle it out.
I know. I was saying that, like, the richest man in the room, the white man, is going to just be sitting in the corner, delighting as, like, the minority. Fight amongst themselves.
Fight, right? My gladiators.
Yeah, right.
Send in those giraffes.
What?
Oh.
Well, in like ancient Rome, they thought giraffes were like dragons and they would like pit them against guys with swords and stuff.
What?
Oh, damn.
I thought you were going to say send in the dragon balls.
Send in the pokeballs. All right. Anyways.
We are fighting each other today.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I mean,
no, we're not.
First of all, I think there's two kinds of appropriation of Black culture by Asians. There is the stuff that's in Asia, specifically really concentrated in East Asia, Japan, Korea, and China, and it's like real, like it's like minstrel show, like blackface, craziness, like trends of people, like people fetishize. And I think a big part of it is also because they don't live in a homogenous society, and a lot of people have never seen a Black person in real life, that it's like they it's like otherworldly to them, and they fetishize Blackness so much that to them it's like a costume that they can put on, and it's a trend they can put on. They can like perm their hair so that it can like and into like a fro, and like put on like do like tan and bronzed, like to the point of like it's straight up blackface. Yeah. It's like completely insane, but it's a whole different conversation because it's within countries that don't have the same kind of race relations that we have in America, and then we have
Like without a specific history of blackface.
Yes,
Although I listen, this is like an American imperialist thing I think all the time, which is like, You motherfuckers haven't seen blackface? Like, there's the internet. Like, surely.
Well, no, but maybe they've seen the movie Bamboozled, and they're like, yeah, oh, no, they're cool. Yeah. Yeah, they're cool with it. Like, the
I don't know.
That the hit movie Bamboozled.
but the internet is so vast. I mean, like every Halloween, although I think this last Halloween might have been an exception, I almost tweeted about it, but I was just like, you know what? I was going to tweet about, like, a fictional, like, celebrity blackface pool.
Yeah.
Like, because it just seems like every Halloween, there's like, okay, what 23-year-old, like, star of some show that we love on HBO or whatever is just going to turn out to, like, they're just like, hey, I thought I'd go as Tiger Woods for a thing, so I got a baseball cap, and I was like, you know what, and then they just do it, and then they're like shocked to, I think it's because the internet isn't just a bunch of recipes and maps and facts now. It's like now it's just a place where you can suck on the Twitter teat forever, and you might not learn anything.
Yeah,
it's amazing though. I mean, you have to have no friends who are willing to tell you the truth. That you put yourself in blackface on Instagram.
Yeah.
That's really like a bubble. That's a hell of a bubble.
Well, I feel like it's more just the bubble that also we're in, even though I hate that stance of like, we're also in a bubble. But I do feel like there's a consciousness, I think, closer to, I think, the LA area that, like, whenever I step out of it, because, you know, I grew up out here, so sometimes I'll go out to Orange County, the Orange Curtain. Mm-hmm. That's where all the Republicans go to hide. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, just people just flagrantly just dropping the F word, you know, here and there. People just like, and by the F word, I don't mean fuck. Just for those, we can curse here.
It's
a bit late. But like, it's like a different world, just a different world where it's like, oh no, out here, yeah, all that shit y'all talking about down there, like, we don't care. We're still in 2000.
Yeah, the bubble is small.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You'd be surprised at how. The bubble doesn't even extend all throughout California.
Yeah.
But you were saying, okay, so the idea of, like, probably, I was thinking a little bit about, I don't know if you have a direct plan, Jessica, about how to traffic this, but there was I feel like a larger quick discussion about cultural appropriation.
Yeah, sure.
Probably makes sense here.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, straight up, I have cousins in the Bay Area that would call each other the N-word. Like,
oh, so that's the crazy thing, because I feel like the N-word usage, it's like, it's one of those weird things where there's no hard and fast rule among black people, because it's like, it is that thing of like, all right, we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. So, like, you might be my nigga. You might be my nigga. There might be a time I'm probably going to call Dan my nigga one.
Oh, my God. I'm going to come in my pants. Yeah.
But with a hard ER. That's the darkest part about how this goes.
But no, it's serious. Like, so I feel like, I remember growing up in Compton, like, we, as far as, like, before, like, because then the black Mexican riots happened, I'm sure this rule faded away. But, like, generally, like, you know, black people and Latinos using the N-word, most people just didn't care because, like, yeah, we all in this together.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember when I met Eddie Wong, and we were having a discussion about that, and I was like, oh, no, yeah, no, you could definitely say it. You got the card. And he was like, well, and he was like, yeah, black people have told me that before. And I'm like, that's your thing. You know, I don't want to take that from you. That's something that you guys have taken back. And I never thought of it that way. I just thought of it of finally a cool thing we get to give away because that's our source of power. But I feel the reason I kind of talk about that is I felt like that is kind of how I've treated, you know, when I was younger, like appropriation and stuff. Like I was always cool. Like it never bugged me seeing like Asian people appropriating stuff. Cause then I'm like, all right, then you probably mess with black dudes. Like, you know, like, and it's like same thing, like white girl in a backwards cap. I'm like, all right, cool. I got a shot. doesn't always, map out, but it is like this thing where like now that you kind of look, I think the biggest way I've kind of now saw like the danger of cultural appropriation. I remember when that Harlem Shake song came out, the second one, and like people from New York hated it, and they were like, "Nope, that's not it." And I was like, "Why? It's just a fun song and all this stuff." I remember, like, during the time, it just never bugged me. I was like, I don't see why it's such a problem. And then, like, I think, like, a few months ago, I went and looked at the – they did this documentary on the Harlem Shake, and they're like, well, since it's so popular, we're doing a documentary about it, showing you the history. And then looking at the comments and people being like, you guys didn't create the Harlem Shake. This YouTuber who made this dumb video did. You guys. And it was like, or you guys. And it was like, oh, that's the danger, is like so many times black people have allowed people to borrow things from the culture, and it's just straight up stolen. And it's like, no, this isn't your thing. This is our thing. But and to see it that, you know, explicit, to be able to read these dumb kids on YouTube being like, no, this guy created it, you guys are stupid. And like,
this is the thing. It's like, black culture can be like, well, so all culture can be borrowed and whatever, but like, certainly like black culture in particular is most jacked in our society.
It's
like,
so it's just fun and easy to jack.
It just gets taken.
And it's I can't, as the white
delegation in the room.
you may speak
as the emperor, if I can say. the crazy thing about it is, and I'm going to speak for a moment about people in total plurality and general groups and things. I'm not, and it's going to sound like I'm dehumanizing people, but I'm talking about, since we pull back and we look demographically, that white people that we deprive like black kids of music lessons, and so they invent hip hop. I grew up noticing that and going like, well, this guy's scratching a record and beatboxing because it was very easy to understand. As a 10-year-old, I was like, well, yeah, I know that there's no music class here. There's no trumpets being handed out. But then that, it was weird for me as an adult to apply that and realize that we white people had been doing that to you black people. That's where I'm apologizing for talking that's what everyone's always talking about with the rock and roll and the blues and the fucking everything back to the beginning of fucking time. And it's pretty crazy. Like, it's pretty, like, that's it. Anyways.
I mean, if you look at music is a great example of it, because if you look to the last 5 years of, just look at the last 5 years of the Grammys and the album of the year. It's like Taylor Swift wins over Beyonce, like Adele wins over like Kendrick Lamar. Like, it's Mumford and Sons, you guys, was album of the year. Like, that's,
wait, they're not black. Okay.
Like, this is mad. You know, it's crazy. Like the last 5 years. I mean, if you go back further, obviously more and more white people. But like, just the fact that it's still to this day, like, you can see it in music.
Well, there's also like, I mean, like Miley Cyrus gets to wear a grill and have an entire tour where
she's quote unquote discover twerking.
Twerk, right?
Yeah.
Without, and then she gets to take that costume off in like, you know, in the last year and decide like, I'm not into black stuff anymore. And she doesn't ever suffer the social stigma, the consequences of doing something. Like, you can be fired for, you know, from your job at Walmart for having a grill.
Yeah.
But like, Miley Cyrus can be lauded and have a number one single?
Yeah.
And Missy Elliott will probably never play the Grand Ole Opry, even if she decides she wants to.
Right. Yeah. In fact, it's an outrage when Beyonce writes a country song.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and that's the wild thing too, I think, when specifically speaking of like white artists, you know, taking blackness for a spin, is I feel like we get that so much where like they'll dip into the culture, feature with some of our artists, and then like are like, yeah, I'm down with you. And then the moment they feel like they want to like shake it off and like make a new name for themselves, like even Justin Timberlake, when he's like, I'm going back to my roots. No, you didn't bring the Frosted Tips back. So what do you mean when you say you're going back to your roots? You're obviously, that's like a dog whistle to be like, I'm not doing this black shit anymore. So come fuck with me, country music.
Yeah. Like, there's a whole history of like the Disney sect of like kind of stars who are like squeaky clean and like child stars who then in their like early 20s decide they want to edge it up and be seen as adults. And the best way to do that is to like put on a black costume, do their edge it up, do their foray into hip hop. And then after they do that for like a year or two and they feel like they've sufficiently established themselves as adult and not a child anymore, then they, you know, decide to, quote unquote, go back to their roots. And then they go back to kind of like, you know, regular white pop star.
Right. Yeah.
It's like the most transparent type of rebellion. It's like,
yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah, Dad. Well, what if I like black culture?
And, you know, and here's the thing. There's a lot of, specific to Asians and black people, there's a lot of, like, Asian on black racism, well documented, especially in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And like when I was a kid growing up in L.A., like, in the suburbs of L.A., like Asian kids, basically, you know, you kind of just followed black culture because there wasn't really popular Asian culture. So, so like in elementary school, like in fifth and sixth grade, you know, like I listened to a ton of like R&B, like, because that was the thing. The breakdown was like Asian boys listen to rap and Asian girls listen to R&B. And so I listened to a shit ton of R&B. And like, I remember every time I'd go and buy a CD, my dad would be like, why do you only listen to music by black people? Like, he was so upset about it.
Wow.
And like, you were like, the answer's in the question, Dad.
And so, like, there's this whole, and when I was a kid, like, you know, in the 90s, I watched all of the black sitcoms. Like, I watched, like, Fresh Prince and In the House and, like, Family. Like, every black sitcom I watched, because I could relate to it more because there weren't any Asian sitcoms on TV, and like I could relate to them more than white sitcoms, because at least when I watch black sitcoms, it's still like a big part of it is still about being not white in America and being othered, you know, by white people and like being different than what else you see on TV.
Yeah.
And so like I related to that more than I could relate to white sitcoms, you know, because like, you know, in my family, we don't end every half hour with a fucking hug and like telling each other how proud we are of each other. You know? So, you know, I think that there's a lot to there is a lot of components to this is like, you know, other than white culture, there is black popular culture in America. Mm. And I think a lot of my other non-black minorities related to that just because they relate to being other and being non-white in America.
Right. And isn't it just a total human, because it's a class system thing. I mean, there's no such, it's like white teenagers don't appropriate Asian culture unless you count our kind of like, well, in the, I guess the Bruce Lee thing though.
Yeah.
Like let's, but like white teenagers in my generation were like, It's Eazy-E that we're singing in the locker room because Asian is the other and black is the misunderstood, the underneath, it's the only way to rebel hierarchically.
Yeah. It's the music of the downtrodden.
Right.
And when you're a teenage boy, sometimes you have trouble realizing that you are downtrodden in some respects, but maybe not in other respects.
And so I'm curious about both of your perspectives on this, but starting with Iffy, like where, because you said it's like so hard to define this, like appropriation, because it can shoot both ways.
Yeah.
Just to white-splain this, like there's a fairy tale version of this where it's like, there's a fairy tale perspective on this, which is that I can't remember which Russian author said I was like something about the flame of truth, like you can pile garbage on it, but it'll just keep burning through. Like you can enforce fraud with force and force with fraud, but the truth just burns up from the bottom. And like that, the fact that a Mouseketeer does have to go black to be authentic and be respected. That's like you said before. You said that's power.
Yeah.
So I hand the conch to you.
I feel like, you know, with that, there is like a level of, I think it goes to appropriation versus appreciation, and like what I generally kind of lean on when it comes to the idea of like, you know, white people or just other non-blacks kind of dipping into culture, I think the best example is always going to be like Eminem. Like he was from it. You could tell he wasn't just taking it for a ride. He grew up within this, and I feel like it, like to kind of take, I guess, a lot of 8 Mile at face value. Like, he like kind of like connected with these people and kind of came up with them, and he never tried to overshadow them. He was trying to be a part of their crew. He never wanted to be the leader. He never wanted to be the guy. He just wanted to belong. And I think that's what it's all about, is like, are you trying to be a part of the party, or do you want to be in front of the party? And
the, like, Lawrence of Arabia thing.
Yeah.
Which I've never seen, but I assume from watching the trailer, right? Well, it's also, that's the old school definition. It's like going native, like Kevin Costner, Dances with Wolves. It's like when you're higher up, you're appropriated. But where do we put Dances with Wolves?
Yeah. Oh,
low.
Because that's white savior.
Yeah. Right. You're not the hero of this story, or you shouldn't be the hero of, like, saving Native Americans.
And also, it's like Dances with Wolves, like Avatar, The Last Samurai. It's always a white dude who immerses himself into
drunk after the break
into another culture that, like, within less than a year you're somehow better at all of the traditions of these people than they all are. Like, somehow Tom Cruise is the only surviving fucking samurai of all these people who are like 16th generation samurai.
And Mickey Rourke is somehow the landlord of this.
He is the last samurai.
Miss Golightly's apartment.
Is truly the last samurai.
But I feel like you've driven us right into the storefront of Big Trouble in Little China, which I think it's okay if we talk about once a week.
Yeah,
because,
absolutely.
Because we were the Kurt Russell does not take over Chinese culture and save it from everybody. He's going after Kim Cattrall, and he's a truck driver, and his partner, his buddy, is like, well, you
Wang.
Talk.
Wang. Yeah,
But Big Trouble in Little China is like weirdly woke for the time.
Yes, totally.
It's eerily woke.
And it's a real bummer to look at that and then look at what's on offer today.
Yeah. It's really if you put the great Big Trouble in Little China script over the Great Wall production, you have a much better movie. It's really... So I wanted to jump in, though, with one other... So I'm an Asian person who grew up in... I'm an Asian person who grew up in Michigan around mostly white people. So I kind of came into my Asian-ness later in life than Jessica. Like, and I think a thing that the original question gets to a little bit is that when... Black people, in this case, like, feel upset about Asian people appropriating black culture, it's because there's this perception that is, you know, something we can talk about, but there's this perception that Asian people are white adjacent or like, you know. So when you're upset about appropriation, it's because there's a power dynamic, because you're like, well, it's about the powerful taking from the less powerful. And it's reasonable to argue that Asian people are more powerful, quote unquote, than black people in America in 2018.
The Japanese were referred to as honorary whites in an official Pentagon memo before we entered World War II.
Yeah.
They're like, these guys are, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Right.
Like they're Asian, but not really.
It's dope when the Pentagon and the Nazis have the same view on races. It's like, oh yeah, this shit runs very deep. But I think that's the thing. It's like initially, when you hear this thing about, you know, and we've been joking about it, which is there's this term that, you know, woke Twitter and other places that are more legit than that use called the Oppression Olympics, which is like the only people that benefit when people of color squabble amongst each other are the Dan Harmons of the world. You know, it's only the straight white guys that benefit from, like, you know, black men arguing with white women about feminism, or like Asian people arguing with black people about rap. It's like, so there's an argument to be made that this whole discussion is problematic because it's not the one to have.
I can't get away with it, but I always just want to be that guy. I can't be that guy for the same reason you just said. It's like, I want, when I see women fighting women about us, it's like, why are you two fighting? Like, just everybody fighting with each other. And I want to just make the joke and say, like, I feel like Mr. Burns. I really just like, I've been cast in that role because I watch it and I go, this is really quite benefiting me, because if we actually put me in the 1% and actually put me in the hegemonical culture or whatever, it's like, yeah, the thing that the upper class fears is a bunch of poor people all agreeing that the only thing that they're all poor.
Yeah.
And
uniting with each other. That's the big thing. Well, so that's sort of the argument about why this conversation is problematic from the jump.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although I think it's an important conversation.
But I also think there's a level of like, it's not that it's problematic, it's that it's nuanced. And I feel like we've reached an age where nuance is dead. Like, mm-hmm. Everything has to be absolute. And I think that's where you run into the problem of people bumping heads, where it's like, because I'm oppressed, I have to look at it as I'm the most oppressed. And instead of looking at, there's different types of oppression, there's different types, like being the model minority has its cons, you know, it's not just sunshine and rainbows, et cetera, et cetera. And I think having these discussions are so hard because people are so focused on being like, no, I have problems. I'm the only one that has problems. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we can't talk about any other people's problems. And I used to get caught up like that. And I think the only time it really is legitimate is when people try and use like comparative languages where it's like, oh, that's the N-word for women. And it's like, nah, don't do that. Like, just say it's a shitty thing. But I do think, the public fighting and all that stuff. Like, I started a thing within like the like black UCB community. Like, if I see like two black people squabbling, I'll like send them a message where it's like, keep it in the messages, keep it in the DMs,
keep us offline.
No arguing in front of mixed company. I created a whole like Facebook group where it's like, if y'all want to throw down, you throw down in here. Because it is like, because I do, like, I've watched it happen where like people who may disagree with that person or just the movement in general will use it to nitpick it. Like when Sean King and DeRay was fighting, what's that shitty website?
Breitbart.
Breitbart did a whole write-up on it where they chose a side and then they used it to just bash the hell out of Sean King because of all the dirt that, you know, one side was pulling up about Sean King.
Yeah.
They were like, yep, they're right. He's trash, you know, and.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more telling than that because we, as liberals, we get so excited when Steve Bannon's fighting with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
The reason we're excited, we can be honest about it.
Yeah.
We just want you guys fighting.
Yeah.
We're in a war. But it's really telling when the other side, like, they don't admit that they're excited because they're in a war, but they go, ah, Rose McGowan, you can't get along with Alyssa Milano, can you? Boy, boy, boy.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, but they won't just say, we love to watch you fight.
Yeah.
Here's a pillow. Throw your hair around a little more.
Yeah.
Like, I if he hit on something incredibly, like important to me, and this is all about me, because my therapist was just talking about this. It's like she was talking about somebody. There's some woman who's, because she's a woman and just an object to me, I can't remember her name. She's like an author or something. She talks about how we are living in the most categorized age. Like we have achieved the capacity to categorize ourselves. Like we're at peak thatness, and it's not a good thing or a bad thing, but what it has done is it's distracted us completely from something that's right in the palm of our hand that you were just hitting on, which is we have the tools right now for complete 100% authentic personal expression. If we use our I statements, as my therapist would say, like, we can reach the world with them. That's why we like it when someone says, I am a 35-year-old autistic Asian war veteran. And then we lean in because it's a knot hole through a fence and we want to hear their story. But then we immediately we're going to start processing that and start talking about demographics and stuff. But that's the thing, is it's like, that's what we're missing. We're not balancing our diet with that. It's cool that it's nuance. That nuance should allow us to say, I'm an Asian from Michigan. Like, I have absolutely almost nothing in common except for these categorical things with Jessica. I'm this black and stuff like that. And it's like, the categories shouldn't fade away. We shouldn't have this Roddenberry dream of everyone just forgetting who they are, or this Disney dream of like, oh, you happen to look different and that's great. But like, we should but it's like we, that, whatever. I gotta stop babbling. I can't believe I monopolized a conversation about Asians and blacks.
We don't. But you know what? It only took you half. It took you a whole half hour, so that's pretty good. Yeah, we don't want a world without color because color is wonderful. You know, like there's nothing wrong with color, and there's nothing wrong with acknowledging color and being.
Unless
proud.
It's a mole, then it's problematic.
Unless it's white, the absence of all color. but like, you know, but specific to in American society, in American culture, like there is this whole thing of Asians like Eddie Huang appropriating. And the thing with like him and having black friends who give him a pass is like, sure, like the friends that you have that you grew up with might give you a pass because they personally know you and have this personal relationship with you. But that doesn't mean that it's invalid if he meets a new black person who's like, I'm not okay with you using the N-word, you know, because it's like his friends don't speak for all black
people. And to be fair, he's very explicit about how he never uses
it. Also, like, I want to say, like, getting the N-word card isn't, it isn't a credit card. It's more like, like it's like a Sam's Club card. You can only use it at Sam's Club. Don't try and bring that shit to Walmart. You're gonna.
Oh, I was gonna say it's like the poison pill of presence because it's like by wanting it, not the poison pill. Well, the gift of the magi. I don't know. There's something where you're not supposed to want. It's a thing like the more you want one, the less you should have one. Yeah. The only person who deserves one is someone who will never use it.
Yeah.
Totally. Are you listening, Quentin Tarantino? But there's also a difference between cultural appreciation and cultural appropriation, you know? And I think, like, when people want to consume a different culture, like, it's wonderful if you want to appreciate a culture. And I think a really good general rule of thumb is, like, look at who's profiting from and benefiting from your consumption. You know, like if you like a certain thing from a certain culture, are you buying it from Urban Outfitters or are you buying it from a person from that culture directly and they're actually getting the money for it?
Yeah, I actually want to, I think we're hitting on a good part because I feel like this is where a lot of people's kind of huge mass of knowledge of cultural appropriation lies is within like the clothes we wear. And I feel like people are very quick to point fingers and be like, that's cultural appropriation. And they're usually not of the race that is doing it. They just want to be the call out because there is certain things where like, you know, it like we have these Nigerian fundraisers where like we'll have these parties where we raise money and we send it back to our like homes in Nigeria. They don't like when I call it village. I got checked on that when I got home from Nigeria. I was like, oh, here's me in the village. And it was like, bruh, we call it home. We don't call it village.
Oh,
so,
man.
So just that's a pro tip.
That's a if huge sense of relief to me that no matter how woke you get.
Yeah. You're still going to get, you're
well,
still going to get
your
checked.
Your family is still always just going to be like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They
there's always a higher road.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
But yeah, like, but, like, you know, we'll have, like, you know, obviously, because friends of people will come. So there'll be white people and, like, usually they'll dress in the traditional wear and all that. And I think out of context, someone on Tumblr might be like, look at these people culturally appropriate. And we're like, no, we welcome that. We like that you're taking part in our culture. Whereas, you know, when you want to go to Coachella and, like, throw it on with a shirt and just be like, yeah, hell yeah, hashtag nigga, then maybe not. Maybe it's not as...
I'm looking at that hashtag right now. That was rough, man. Don't go there.
So between the two of you, because I'm trying to, it's like because I'm trying to walk away with a lesson or a thermometer or something. Mm-hmm. It's like the what I'm hearing. It's a very clear, quote unquote, rule or guideline is like appropriation in and of itself, not a bad thing, or unless that word means the bad version of it. Like
appreciation,
like, letting shit trickle in from another culture into your life is not a bad thing at all. Yeah. In fact, it's the whole point. But take inventory of where you're getting it and how you're using it.
Yeah.
Actually a little bit. I actually would quibble a little bit and maybe argue that maybe an easier way to look at it is it's a spectrum a little bit. Like
just like everything else.
No, this again.
It's, you know, like as in it's there is it's not a bright line between.
When are you Asians going to learn that everything's black or white?
I know. That's a better problem.
You're obsessed with spectrum.
That's the only time
that's
we're
the
visible.
Only place we exist. We live in the spectrum. That's to me, it's like. Two things. One is like, it is kind of a spectrum. It's like, you know, somewhere between appreciating something or contributing to a culture, like, you know, great, a lot of great white jazz musicians, couple great white rappers. Like, it's like
Eminem and I thank you. It's like,
yeah, your mixtape is really good, though.
It's fire.
It
it's
doesn't
fire.
Seem like it should be, but it's very good. Yeah. You know, and I think the other part, the sort of piggybacking on that is a thing that just with the whole racism conversation in general, which is like, think about how if you can absorb when someone points at you and says, I think that's appropriation, or I think what you said was racist, in a way that's constructive rather than sort of spinning a narrative about why you're a good person and
right.
it's okay and
leaping
that I did
to
this.
The defense. I think.
Yeah. So that's sort of the thing, which is like, it kind of doesn't. I mean, look, it's I think that people could be more judicious about calling people out. Look, I have a vested interest in call out culture, so that's my thing. But I get it. It's annoying. It's not always productive.
Right.
And I think people could be, you know, more judicious on that front. But it's also like, how bad is it really to get called out for cultural appropriation? Like,
I mean, it depends on the context. It's a
sure.
But what you're hitting home is, yeah, as with it, we've said racism is a spectrum. We declared that very early here. And I just got called out for sexual harassment from years ago. And you know what? That's a spectrum too, because mm-hmm. And that was part of the point of it was like, yeah, can you just take it? Can you just say, yeah, you know what? That was harassment. I think part of the problem is that we have such a hyped up capitalist society
sure.
that we settle things in court and out of court financially and liability and all these things. Maybe that's why. All I can say as a white person is, like, getting called an abuser, getting said that I assaulted, harassed, getting said that that I'm racist. Like, it's a joke. It's a stereotype mm-hmm. with white people. But it's like, call me anything you want, but never call me racist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, your hand just goes for your six gun. You want to just fucking blow yeah. everyone that calls you racist away until you can prove you're not racist.
Yeah. Well, because it feels like an existential threat.
Because you could lose your job, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
You know what? I don't even think it's really about that. I think but it feels like it's a bad identity. It feels because white people don't have one. And so it's like, the one thing I can do to be a good white person is to not be racist. And you're taking that away from me, you fucking horrible minority. or usually, you horrible liberal white person that doesn't know me and wants to take
sure.
a shot at me.
Right.
Yeah,
and so you're like fan-gunning like at every you're like, I'm going to prove I'm not racist.
Yeah.
And then you look around and the room is riddled with bullets. No one is less racist. And I'm trying to it's a nervous system thing, I swear. It's a neurological fucking thing. Like you said, like practice taking it in. Going like, yeah, maybe I'm racist.
Yeah.
Well, I at least give you credit for picking a white weapon and not like a samurai sword.
But I do think it is just the new wave also of internet culture of like, you know, I feel like everything has built to like we have to answer everything the moment we see it right away. And
oh,
there's
now
never...
you're attacking my livelihood. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what do you got?
Even I have to like catch myself from doing like, you know, just shooting from the hip just because I'm being reactionary. Because also, you, even though like sometimes people are real good at getting across their tone, you never know the tone at someone's kind of sending you something with. You just see words and you just read it in however you want to read it. So if it's just like, for example, if like someone after this was like, the podcast, you could have been better. Like they, like, you know, like, I mean, that's kind of a dick thing to say, but that's just the first thing that came to my head. But if I read it the first, I'm going to read it as like, you could have been better, you punk ass bitch. Like
right.
that's how I'm mm-hmm. going to read it, when it could have just been like, oh no, you could have explained this better. And I'm just, this is my feedback from a genuine place.
Yeah. Or like, I wish you would have done this better, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ha ha ha. Kind of makes you want to lay back on a Sealy mattress. I don't know what our sponsor is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, should we take a sponsor break?
Yeah,
sure. Let's take a sponsor break. So we covered before the break, if we actually had a break, we kind of covered like a little bit of the difference between appreciation and appropriation. I think that I don't think that the purpose of this conversation is to turn people away from like learning about cultures, liking other cultures. And I think there is something to be said about like cross-pollinating between cultures and remixing and things that, you know, and so that's not what we want to do here. But there is like a point where if you are profiting off of someone else's culture, I think that's when it becomes really, really problematic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also like Hollywood, right? Where mm-hmm. everyone is liberal, no one is racist, and everyone is like trying to do the right thing. And yet we like just so happen to get, you know, hugely disproportionately white, you know, stars and directors and writers and whatever. So it is a thing where it's like cultural appropriation kind of has that same thing where it's like, you know, very few people in that supply chain, in that economy are like, I'm an outright racist. Everyone's like, I'm cool. I'm trying my best. And it's just like, but then time and time again, you see most prominently black culture getting taken by other folks. So it's like a thing where it's like no one's it's like, how do you have a racist system with no racists in it?
And I think that's because the gears that turn our system, it's easy to not be racist. Like it's like by the definitions that we put out, like mm-hmm. like the welcome mat definitions, it's harder to not be racist economically. Right. It's harder to not, it's
absolutely.
Harder to like I'll fucking step forward and go like since last November, all I want is my Obama back, and it's not because like it does good for anybody but me. I want my comfort back. I was happy, and then you know the Nazi kids and that do their research will be like, what about the drone strikes and all that shit? Or the fucking Bernie people are like, you know, that's no better than they're all right. Everybody's right. Everybody's fucking like right about all the hypocrisy and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't want to change anything. The minute fucking Trump got elected, I bought a goddamn gun. Fragility. Like I'm fucking like I'm scared of change. And that you don't have to not you can say I'm not racist and walk and talk the talk and you can be afraid of change mm-hmm. and therefore contribute to the system that you're talking
some
about.
Some kind of walk, right. But like not all of the walks. I don't know. That's why I'm a little bit like maybe look, we all I think are pretty annoyed by some of the terrible, you know, writing or the entitlement of like call out culture or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's also just like to me, I'm like, maybe that's one way the boulder gets pushed.
At
you
least.
Know, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I feel the same way. I thought the first came around, I started, my radar started going up. I'm like, wait, this person has told less jokes per minute than Richard Pryor. This person is standing on stage holding a microphone and talking about what it's like to be them, and there's no setups or punchlines. And then over time, I was like, well, yeah, but we haven't afforded any other pathway.
Yeah.
We're not, it's not working. Nothing else is working.
Yeah.
Like as admirable as any diversity programs or anything, economic lack of racism is basically, by another name, it's called socialism.
Right. Yeah.
It's called the idea of starting to distribute wealth. And that starts to become shoveling the sidewalk of capitalism, which has a big, heavy snow pile on it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to start shoveling my money away for one thing. I like to put myself in the category of like an Alec Baldwin or something where I'm like, hey, I got enough money. I want to pay. I'll pay 70% taxes, make everybody free and happy. But how much work do I want to do? I want to fill out a form.
Right.
I still want my jobs. I want to fill out a form that says I give 70% to the government. Now, Obama, make everything equal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's also coming from a position of someone who like, you know, is pretty doing well in life, doing okay in life. And then you got the harder half, which is poor white people who don't want to admit someone has it harder than them because they're having it the hardest. Yet, in the same breath, we'll say Trump's doing an amazing job when they're still having the same shit problems. That's when you have to, like, I was thinking about this the other day, how people after Obama's two terms, where the numbers show that there was a drop in unemployment that he really has helped, and they'll think to themselves, well, he didn't do anything because I'm still not working.
Right.
But then Trump gets in office, and then you're clapping, but you're still in the same
position.
Still
don't have a job.
And it's like, see, that's the racism right there.
Right.
That's what it is that because at first it was selfishness, but when you're now okay to will, you're okay to be in the position because there's a white man in power, that's when it turns into racism. And it is that thing where my brother Ricky, who you met,
oh, yeah,
he has a really great way of looking at it when you deal with poor white people who's like, I don't want to deal with, you know, I have it bad too. It's like, well, would you rather be poor and white, or would you rather be poor and black?
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, they'll say they'd rather be poor and white, because like everyone knows the poor black experience is shitty, because like it's hard to get up when you can't even get a job because looking at your name on paper, you know, is like rough. Like imagine, I think too, like just only because I just saw it, but like in Chappelle's special when he says like Draymond Green is the blackest name, you know, it's like can you imagine like putting in job applications, Draymond, you're really trying to pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah.
And every application they look at Draymond Green and they're like, we're good. You know,
because there's a lot of classism in that kind of name too.
Yeah.
You know, like because there's definitely a class of black that would have that name versus someone who would, like a family that would name their kids like Brandon.
Yeah.
Or something, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I feel like I have been privileged in the sense that, you know, by my whole name being Ife Shakuta Ijeoma Mwadiwe, they're like, oh, this guy's African, so he probably is like a college education,
yeah,
right,
you know, hardworking. Little do they know, none of those.
Just a Dragon Ball Z fan.
Just a Dragon Ball Z fan trying to buy his anime sex doll, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's a great segue. Let's turn the finger back to you.
Let's turn this glove inside out.
Let's talk about black fetishization.
Ooh,
of Asians.
Boy. Like, I think to begin, we need to find out who started that whole thing of like Japanese women love black dudes, because I think that was patient zero. That's when black people were like, oh, really? Is that the case?
Yeah, it feels like, yeah, there is a very direct link between it's Japanese culture. Like,
yeah,
it's less of the other Asian cultures.
Oh,
it's,
yeah,
very specifically Japanese.
Yeah, like, it's weird if you want it, like, just from my experience growing up in Compton as an American black dude, it is like we kind of do categorize like the different like major Asian companies where we're like Japanese are the hot people with anime, Koreans are the store owners who don't like us,
who wanna shoot,
yeah,
you,
who want to shoot us, and then Chinese people are like the smart ones, like
I was waiting to see where we were going to trade in there.
like that's where guy, it is crazy where like it, like there's like, because I feel like a lot of times it's everyone, like it's every single person of color. Because you are an oppressed person of color, you don't look at your racism ever. But like there are sometimes like I'll just like listen to in rap songs and how like, you know, Asian people are described, or like, I don't know, this is a deep cut, but you remember that
Two Live Crew and Me So Horny?
No, but that's a good one. You remember
any Wu-Tang album?
No, it was on the Games album, and it was a snippet before it, and it's like this little kid talking to this Korean shop owner, and he's saying the most racist shit, and it for no real reason, but to just be like, here's a thing at the top, and it, like, I remember, like, you know, I never was like, yeah, this is cool. I was always like, all right, this is kind of weird.
This is intense.
Like, as I get older, I'm like, this is rough. Like, this would be taken off the shelves if this was like a white like person.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And I feel like there is that, and it goes back to like what we kind of talked about with back in Oscar's So White, and then that those weird Asians, like, skits, I guess we'll call them.
Yeah.
Where it's like, even in this whole movement where we're fighting for equality of black people, we still, like, make Asians the butt of the joke. And I think it is, it does have to do with this level of, like, well, they're, like, model minorities. They don't have it as bad as us.
Also, so we can, like... Yeah, you could be Asian, you could be Korean, Vietnamese, Chinese, Japanese. And so the idea of Asianity as a race is, quote-unquote, it's still allowed to be a joke to both black people and white people, and we can deal with our racial issues by using Asian as a tarot card for race.
Yeah.
Well, it's because it's someone other.
It's the same. I mean, this is an unfortunate parallel, or the most fortunate one ever, but it's the way that you could, if you were making religious jokes, you're not going to fuck with Islam as much as you're going to fuck with Christianity as much as, and everyone's going to dogpile Buddhism.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
you can, because there is no such thing as a militant Buddhist. And
there are now.
They're back. Okay. They're back now.
They literally, no, this is not a joke, actually. Those are the people killing all the Muslims in Malaysia?
Yeah, the
I don't fucking, this is some shit I should know more about.
But yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, where they're like literally wiping out a race of people.
There's no religion that can't be used to kill people, I guess.
Yeah, totally.
But even Buddhism.
That's so interesting because, Buddhist was like the last bastion where it's like, well, we'll at least be Buddhist.
I hear they're spinning it as just like, I'm going to speed up your reincarnation.
Kids
are calling it militant mega Buddha, and think it's anything but.
It's a big part of this is also that Asians aren't scary, you know, like people aren't scared of Asian people the way they're scared of black people or Latino people. And also like Asians are the closest to white people on the spectrum, and they benefit the most out of all the minorities.
Yeah.
And so that's why they're still an okay target.
Well, to put an addendum on that, when by scary, I think we mean socioeconomically. With italics on the socio part of socioeconomically, the tradition of black people being able to create a fucking, like, shut shit down because of their outrage, it precedes my birth. It almost precedes my parents' birth. Asian, there's no Asian Million Man March. There's no Asian, like.
But I also mean on a physical level. Yeah. Like I think a white woman walking down the street is going to feel very differently if a black guy is walking behind her than if, like, some dude who looks like Andrew walking behind her.
I mean, I am a living weapon. But there's no stereotype of anymore, and it's like kind of a new thing, relatively speaking, in history. There's no stereotype of a savage Asian. Sense like the 80s.
That bitch would let you hold her baby, but she's not gonna let Iffy touch her baby. That's all I'm saying.
And Iffy is actually good with kids.
Oh yeah, you know.
But do you really think that's why, when a comedian chooses to go, you know, in any direction,
I think that's a component for
that,
sure.
That they're
I think
thinking
that's
about
for sure.
individual scariness, or I think they're I think thinking about like demographic
think
power.
But I think it's a component of it, like because the physical fear is like what. If this white guy makes a black joke, if he goes out in public, some big scary black guy might have heard that joke, get mad at him, and want to beat the shit out of him.
Because we run through a simulation in our head of coming out the backstage door, and the racist chip in our head conjures a prototypical racial person.
All of the stereotypes are waiting for you outside.
Like, imagine him looking into the audience, and he sees, like, a black guy and an Asian guy, and he's like, which joke am I going to make, like, with that guy making direct eye contact at me.
Eddie Murphy in Raw, I think it was, like, actually works this math out on stage. He tells some gay jokes and then he pauses and says, like, I'm not supposed to tell, probably shouldn't tell gay jokes, but it's not like, and then he runs through the additional meta gay joke of the idea of a gay guy, you know, beating you up. So maybe
it's a little bit of that.
But that's also, I just, quick sidebar, that is like my biggest fear as like a stand-up comedian or improviser is being like Dimebag Daryl. Like, ever since I heard that story, is like,
what is that story?
This is my stereotype is just assuming that maybe the engineer might know, be able to fact check this, but I think he was in Pantera, No, not Pantera. He was in a metal back. He's searching and he shook his head. I saw him physically shake his head from over there like, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
You think
about.
Just because a white dude's got a
you offended his whiteness.
A ponytail.
Yeah, 100%. 100%, Dan. 100%. If you got a ponytail, you know about rock. Get out of here. You don't grow a ponytail without knowing about rock. But, like, he was at a show and someone shot him while he was on stage performing. And that's been like, shit, that could happen to me.
But what did it have to –
that's just my fear.
They shot him because of
it was like a crazy fan who was like, oh, you didn't read – you know, like that Eminem song, Stan?
You're just saying that in general, stand-ups are always thinking about
maybe not stand-ups, but me. Like, I'm afraid, like – and I – it was indeed Pantera. Yes!
I'm just going to – if he just – for the next time you tell that story, just go with Selena.
Selena. But Selena, apparently – Marcella Argueo was telling me the other day she didn't die from the gunshot.
What?
No.
What
she
do you mean?
Died. She died because her parents were Jehovah's Witness and didn't let her get a blood transfusion.
No.
Yeah, she actually took the shot and she went down to the lobby, called the cops, told them that what happened. They took her to the hospital and her parents didn't let her get a blood transfusion because she's Jehovah's Witness.
What the fuck?
Yep. Yep, religion strikes again, y'all.
That sounds
like a theater venue insurance agent working overtime. I think he dug deep to shift that accountability. I have a feeling those payphones didn't work.
Real quick, going back to Dan's point though about Asian
people in general,
sort of
they're so great.
Asian, like, economic or like the idea of like Asian political activism.
Fear of repercussion, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the reason why I would like, it's like 8 years ago, I would say, like, I was part of that thing. I was like, yeah, Asian, it's fun. It's like, if you want to do a joke about racist jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
You could go Asian. I use the example of Cable Guy. Remember, did you see Cable Guy?
Yeah, of course.
There's a joke within there that's like, the joke is, it's clearly a riff on the idea that when white people kill their kids or whatever and they want to, the random black guy thing, they use Asian. It's like
Oh, somebody wrote in and said that was based in truth. Like, the Menendez brothers actually did blame it on an Asian guy.
Oh, Asians? Really?
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought they blamed like the Italian mafia or something,
I only watched one episode of that.
Oh, the Law and Order Mended.
But then it feels safe because I'm worried about a sumo wrestler standing that's going to come and attack me, but because because of the socioeconomic equivalent of that, which is that I won't get crucified,
right. Mm-hmm.
and that's just a matter of
that's what I was. It like goes back to a thing we've been sort of circling around, which is like Asians. The model minority idea, which is like the Asians are the good ones, is relatively new. I mean, it was like a wedge issue essentially dreamed up in and around the civil rights movement. Because Asian people were a big part of the civil rights movement. Not a big part, but a part. And they were much more unified. We were much more unified as a people. And then the idea of the model minority of elevating Asian, East Asian people in particular, kind of went down. And that's sort of why there's no danger of like repercussion of socioeconomic repercussion for talking shit about Asians is because we are very fractured politically. Like there isn't like say, I don't know, the equivalent of the NAACP for Asian people. Because I'm related to many Asian people who are like straight up. I've been trying to figure out whether to call them racist or what on my podcast, so I've settled on calling them white supremacists.
Yeah,
that's kind of what they are.
Yeah, that's how I describe my family too, as white supremacists.
It's like they 100% buy in to
the American dream, the melting pot.
Yeah,
and they resent immigrants for that reason.
Yeah.
I've met these people.
Yeah, yeah.
And
but
it's
also
bizarre.
White is best, right. And then our kind of Asian, and then other, then the pale-skinned Asians and then the dark-skinned Asians. And then after that, it doesn't even fucking matter.
Yeah. Well, and then it's like the same as whatever the fuck Richard Spencer, like, you know, is carving into his forehead and in the mirror.
Well, that's what's wild is, like, I even on the Nigerian side, like, for some reason, Nigerians love Donald Trump. Like, and I don't want to say I don't want to, like, paint this big brush, but, like, my uncle was going hard on, like, a lot of his friends back in Nigeria because for some reason something he said got them on his side. And, like, And it was wild because, like, my sister was the first one to tell me. She was like, I don't know why, but all these Nigerians like Donald Trump. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then my my uncle, who's been, like, really uncling it out by posting, like, tons of anti-Trump memes. Like, I'll see, like, just straight up, like, people from Nigeria being like, leave him alone. And I was like, what do you mean? what do you mean? Like, but I think it's once again that, like, when you're – and I think that's the same thing that – when you don't have to deal with the effects, you get to kind of fantasize about, like, you know, just your idea of what he's doing, just this American guy. Right. Like, they don't understand.
Well, you're not terrified of, like, we're inside that plumbing.
Yeah.
Like,
we're
worried about America sliding into fascism. That is my concern. My concern isn't whether the president is racist. My concern is that a racist president is being allowed to be racist, which means that I'm going to end up having to find out what I'm made of because we're going to slide into fascism.
Right.
Fascism is economically inconvenient for me.
I hope you know how to use that gun you bought.
I don't. It's going to blow up in my hand because the first thing I did is clean it. Because I was like, this is cool. And so I know it's going to blow up in my hand when I shoot it.
I can show you how to shoot a gun.
It's such a stereotype.
Jessica got gats.
Is that a stereotype?
I don't know.
It is now. But there's also a thing that Iffy just brought up, which is like, I mean, loosely, the idea of, like, the motherland and people kind of people from, because it's like I remember, like, an example that is kind of recent is that movie The Great Wall.
Yeah.
Or Ghost in the Shell. Like, respectively, like, Chinese American or Chinese and Japanese people sort of were like, these are great. It's awesome that we get Matt Damon Scarlett Johansson to be in our stories.
I was working with this writer, and we had a conversation that somehow got to this point. And I just want to share this because it's like from our nation's history, because it really Henry Ford, who we all have mixed feelings about, like Henry Ford apparently, according to this writer, is telling me he's researching this guy because he wants to write a movie about the whole thing, but like. Henry Ford had all these immigrant workers, he would have this fucking, like, day. I don't know if it was annual or quarterly. Literally a melting pot set, like, on the factory floor that you would walk. You would spend the first half of the day wearing the flag, or like it was a kind of a fun office day where like you'd dress. If you were from Germany, you'd wear your Lederhosen. If you were wherever you were from, and you'd have like a little flag on you or whatever. And then halfway through the day, there's this ceremony, and it was, I can't remember what it was called, like American Day or whatever, America Day. And these factory workers would walk into this melting pot set that was created, and they would walk out and they would be given like an American flag to replace their thing, and I think, and they would wear like American clothes after that and all this stuff. Like it was but from in that day, like this is part of the quote-unquote problem and maybe part of the quote-unquote solution, is that in that day, before we had built an empire on that philosophy, an empire so successful that we got so comfortable that we got the luxury of starting to worry about whether immigrants were dirty and whether immigrants were worried about whether – it was like they didn't feel like they were being like – fascists or anything like that by signing off. They were like thrilled, you know, they were like, oh my God, this is exactly what I want. A clean slate. I want to live in the hotel lobby of the planet. I want to come. I want to merge into this thing. And like, we're so many generations removed from that mindset. And yet we still have all these tendrils from it. We're having these arguments that are based on like, we don't even know what, like you can see, we have a fucking president in office right now who doesn't even understand that concept. I think President Trump, if he looked at that ceremony, he'd go, well, why did you have all these fucking brown people in your factory in the first place? Like, right. Like would you, can you save money on that melting pot set?
Yeah.
And then there'd be other people who'd be like, that's so fucked up. You're divesting these people of their heritage and their culture. Neither of these people are right or wrong. They're just different. They're just coming from different places. And it's like, that's why we're so fucking confused. Like, this experiment is not over. It is bubbling and cracking the beaker.
and it's not going great.
Yeah, it's going better than in Vietnam or wherever it's okay to do blackface on a talk show.
Well, it's like it's going better than any other experiment, and it's still going pretty bad. that's the real thing. It's like
that should be the sign. That should be replaced with "Give me your weary."
On the Statue of Liberty.
Give me your weary. Give me your fed up. It's going better here than it is wherever you came from, but it ain't going great.
It's all right.
But the blackface was in Japan, and the only reason I know is because I got a homie who lived out in Japan, which was from like my straight mega weeb days when I was like.
You should define weeb for.
Oh yeah,
Dan, like, but maybe not the audience.
Yeah, yeah. a weeb or a weeabo is like just a derogatory term for like anime fans who just are like typical. Just who I was like. You just
who
love Japanese.
Typically.
Yeah, yeah. You're not Asian, but you love the culture. You pose with katanas. You take Japanese classes so you can watch anime.
That's called a weeb?
A weeb. So I remember because this is when I was working at Disneyland, because that's your rite of passage when you work in California and live near Orange County. You have to work at Disneyland. And this guy, Pierce, and he was really like he's living his best life because he was really into like J-punk and like and he was talking about and we both were gushing over like how much we love Japan and like all this stuff. But like, you know, he was more legit because like I feel like I was appropriating and he was appreciating in the sense that like he learned the culture and he went over there to teach English and I just wanted to go over there to sleep with Japanese women. But like he's over there and so like but he's still like very like he's like on point like just politically with Japanese politics because when Trump met the Japanese prime minister and I was like, oh man, this guy hates meeting Trump and he was like, no, he doesn't. He's trash. He's like apparently the Japanese prime minister is like their Trump. Like it seems like every country is having like their Trump.
Yeah. And that's what scares me.
Yeah. Every like it's so weird. It's like because I went to London in December and like it was always like, so what's up with Trump? And I'd be like, what's up with Brexit? And we all had the same explanation.
We're in a global right wing slide and it's really scary.
But like everyone's explanation is exactly the same. It's like we didn't think it'd go anywhere. It just we thought that it was just a few people and then yada yada yada, here we are.
That's why we gotta reach those people.
Yeah.
Because
you
didn't have a conversation with any of the people that were like, I'm sticking to my guts. Because that's 16% of every fucking country.
Yeah.
It's the people that are right in the middle that are like that saying that. Like I have friends like that that are like he doesn't mean anything and it's a joke and also better than her and all this crap. Like we gotta reach those people right now before 2020 we don't do it like we do it by I'm drunk
that's all good. It's all good. I'm coming up right behind you, Dan. Just I'll see you in a few.
I caught myself.
But the answer to how do we reach those people
we do it with the third eye in our pineal gland.
But it is that level of frustration, and it is just like what the fuck do you
it's
do?
It's an
with
opportunity
these
to like though to like what's going on in your own head. Like, what is my definition of friend, enemy, race, all that shit? Yeah. Like, that's the thing.
Okay, if we're looking at it in this scope of like, let's keep the world from sliding into an all access power world, then yes, like talking about Asian appropriation of black culture and black appropriation of Asian culture does seem like kind of a moot point.
Yeah.
Well,
no, because we want to give birth to a new era where everyone's nuanced and everyone is using their I statements.
Okay, all Asian people and black people get together, unite, and then we all...
Yeah.
And then we get the Latinos on board, and then we all overthrow the white people.
That's been the general, like, thing that we've been trying to do for years. And just like, if you notice, I just so offhandedly mention being in Compton and relationships before the Black and Mexican riots. Just like, it was like, and it really was like just a day because at the time I was going to Downey, my brother was going to Centennial, same high school as Kendrick Lamar, and they had Black and Mexican riots, and it was a big deal. And it all started from this like MySpace bulletin. Me and Carl Tart, guy who's on my improv team, white women,
and a podcaster.
Yeah, podcaster. He's on Culture
King. Why are we shouting out someone else's podcast?
I don't know. I wasn't.
Because we're trying to boost other minorities, you guys.
That's true.
But like, he grew up out in L.A., and so it was like, it was crazy that it was like an L.A.-wide thing, and it was with, because Mexican gangs have always been beefing with like, with black gangs. Like, I remember Tortilla Flats, which was, come on. I hope I don't die, but also,
is that like
on.
A battle in the no, war? Is no, that that's like Gettysburg? Little,
that's a name of a Mexican gang as Tortilla Flats. Oh. And so like they would like tag like no niggers and like the, so it was a like, big thing.
They
and
then, used the R?
Oh yeah, the ER. Like, I remember looking at that and I was like, damn.
That's heavy.
That's good cursive.
Yeah, yeah. So there was a MySpace bulletin that went out where it was like, don't wear white tomorrow. Anybody who's wearing white, we're shooting. We don't care if you're old. If you're a kid, we're gonna shoot you. So then the black gangs found out. I was like, all right, we're gonna kill you. And so at Centennial, they had to lock down the school because like black people and Mexican people were just fighting. And then like, and Downey was the weenie, like bitch ass version of it, where like literally. All the kids met at Mimi's Cafe. Like, it was in the parking lot of Mimi's Cafe.
And there was like,
we had some omelets.
There was like
four stars on you.
There was like a Braveheart wall of black people and Mexican people. And then all the black people and Mexican people realized we were all friends and we never fought. We were just like
you were all hungry.
Yeah. So it was just one by one, we were breaking the line and just like tapping each other. It's like, hey, man, see you in bio tomorrow. It was so corny. Meanwhile, these guys in Compton and LA are fucking going at it, and we're like, oh, let's go into Mimi.
But so also like to tie all these threads together, there is a thing. It's like the idea of, obviously, you know, you're right, Jessica, it's like it does not matter in the grand scheme of things whether Asian people listen to rap or whatever, or even rap themselves, but I think
love
the thing
the
is,
it's
like, no, I mean, I do think it matters. I think it is a new. I agree with Iffy that it's a very nuanced conversation. But if we're, I mean, if the big conversation we're having is like white supremacy, then
I think it is. It's like an art form. Like, I know this guy LaShawn Thomas, who's a black guy who goes over, and he does, even though he would scoff at me saying this, but he goes over to Japan and he does like anime, and he does animation because anime is just Japanese for animation, but it's very much in that style. And there are like guys like the Teriyaki Boys. We had Jin in the Rough Riders. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fine if you take place in the art form, but when you take stuff and then you also want to choose to be racist against black people or exclude them or look at them as lesser than, I think that's another way.
Yeah.
I love the metaphor of buying it at Urban Outfitters.
To me,
as an internal guideline, and you had said like, oh, there's never going to be any rules. Absolutely. But that's why internal rules are really important.
Yeah.
So like, you know, if I weren't 45 and were in any position to appropriate anything, I would now move forward going like, okay, if I'm going to appropriate anything, let me be aware of it.
Yeah.
That's all I think.
Yeah.
But T, we kind of derailed you. You.
I think the thing I was going to say though, it's sort of just like, we are, it is about like tearing down the walls sort of between minorities. And it's like this sort of thing is how we have that conversation, right?
Yeah.
It's like Asian people, I think personally, like, need to be much more cognizant of the anti-black racism in their own communities, like my own fucking family.
Yeah.
Come at my family first, everyone.
You're just trying to make Thanksgiving easier
for
yourself.
I'm just trying to settle some vendettas right now.
Don't you also have like a racist white uncle?
Yeah, my dumbest aunt married a white guy. She sucks. They all suck.
That's another competition for a title. My dumbest aunt married a white guy.
But yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like all these small conversations really get to the same thing, which is like, you know, the thing if you mentioned before of like, know when to have the conversations within your communities, but have them.
Yeah.
You know, definitely.
But always have them without white people.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, because I am very much a proponent of like, this is a closed door conversation. Let's keep it within the family of POC, you know?
Yeah.
Like outwardly to white people, like united front, but inwardly behind closed doors, within the family, let's fucking hash this out, you know, and deal with our issues.
And that's what this conversation is a little bit. Because it's like I said at the near the beginning, which was just like this whole, you know, there's an argument that this whole conversation is utterly wrong. And I didn't think it was. I don't think it is. And I didn't think it was at the time. But it is like the argument is like the infighting, as we've been joking about, but it's real. Only profits, you know, the white supremacist hegemony.
But there's a, we're not here to profit me or my kind, but but first of all, this podcast, if nothing else, it definitely helps me, and then therefore it helps a bunch of people
totally.
But also, like, I think it's just us banging on the drum of, this is about individuals. Like, keep the truth on your side and keep using your I statements, keep expressing yourself, and then let anybody who tries to side with the split, who tries to tell you, I heard you on that podcast where it was you and a black guy and another and an Asian woman and a white guy, and you guys were all having a big fanfare. What are you talking about? Oh, your big podcast. And I just want to let you know that you fucking hurt me and you hurt my family and all this stuff. Like, first of all, can we absorb that? We're going to go like, oh, well, maybe I hurt your family. And maybe you probably wouldn't lie about that. And we don't fire back at that person and go, you're a piece of shit. But also, second of all, realize that person's a piece of shit. Because they're trying to break up some... Like they're trying to tell people who are like on an upslide that they should be in a downslide, like they're on the side of sometimes I feel like I just want to say to people, like, I think you like division. I think you're a big fan of it.
Yeah.
I feel like this is one of those situations where it's like chill because we're trying to educate. It's not like I came on here and was like, all right, thanks for bringing me on, it's time to bust Andrew's ass wide open because he said some shit. Like,
that's for after the podcast.
that's the closed door thing.
And I feel like, you know, having these, because I do feel like Dan is right, like we don't have enough of these, like, conversations, because I feel like there are, like, people who are well-intentioned but too afraid to ask, because I feel like at this point, it's kind of hard to ask. You ask the wrong person, you're going to get lit up online.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like shows like these where people can just listen in and be like, okay.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, feel free to slide in my DMs, but check my feed first, because if I'm not in a mood, if I'm like, Sheriff Clark said some shit, that's the only, by the way, I do have to redact one thing. The only black person we can bash publicly is Sheriff Clark all the time. Fuck that guy.
Oh, yeah.
I hate him. I'm never not going to go behind closed doors with that fuck. Me and him always out in the open.
Oh.
I've never.
I just aired out my fucking aunt. Yeah. It's fine, dude. It's good.
This is an interesting message there is like, If you're speaking for yourself, speak for yourself. If you want to represent stuff, like, make a podcast, make a Twitter account. It costs nothing. Your Twitter account can have that identity where you want to talk about people in the plurality and stuff and side with the split and say, like, I don't think like that. But as an individual, as yourself, don't you probably wish that everything was better than worse? And therefore, and it's only that when you start to get conflicted, you go like, oh, but however, as a blank American, am I selling myself out by wanting everything to go better? Mm-hmm. And then I think that then maybe we could use the lemons that the internet is and turn it into the lemonade of, it's an anonymous environment where everyone can have a podcast. Everyone can have 90 Twitter accounts. You can, like, fracture your personality into all the shit that isn't you. But the you that you are can be a person that just wants shit to be better tomorrow than it was yesterday. What the fuck am I talking about?
I was rocking with it.
Yeah, uplifting.
Yeah.
Oh, you feel good?
You're just referring to the fact that my second Twitter account is an alt-right persona.
did you see that thing about that girl who spent, like, whatever, how many years? Like, it was like a pubescent girl who posed as a – because she was so into sports – and I'm butchering the story, but it was something akin to, like, this little girl who was, like, so into sports, and she didn't she couldn't self-identify. She couldn't be like, I'm a 14-year-old girl, and I'm here to talk about fantasy football with you guys. So she adopted a persona just to fit in, and then the persona became this, like, crazy racist jingoist, like, fucking... and she just kept,
she just kept going, yes-anding her this persona.
This is what I'm sharing with you based on me reading the headline and never the article.
And being several vodkas into remembering this story.
And looking at the New Yorker art. I'm getting the picture.
All right, let's do final thoughts. Anyone have any final thoughts?
A new tradition.
I thought Dan just did the final thought.
Well, that's Dan's final thought, but you can have your own final thought. You can have the Asian final thought. I'll give that to you.
No, I don't want it.
These Asians can't stop fighting. What do you say? That's why Iffy and I are
going to control the world. Well, because I'm mainland Chinese and Andrew's just some sort of garbage.
Oh my God.
This is real closed door shit. I'll text you on the thread. I think that the thing that, like, you know, if beyond the, like, let's be judicious with this conversation about things like these, because it is like, you know, cultural appropriation. The reason Asian cultural appropriation of Black culture has any weight is because of Asian, East Asian folks in particular, their proximity to whiteness. And that's, it's like a reflection of that. And sort of the other side of it, too, it's like anytime, like, you know, you see like the example I get a lot, people ask me a lot on my blog is like, what about Wu-Tang Clan? They do this kind of like, you know, this like martial arts kind of like stereotype. And I'm like, yeah, but those were like kind of originated by a combination of Asian people and white culture in the 70s. So I'm like, you know, just follow the money. It's still a bunch of like, you know, white Hollywood and a bunch of, you know, kind of Asian people that aren't my favorite Asian
people.
Yeah,
and also on definitely I feel like on the spectrum, like I am on the spectrum of oppression, even though we're not supposed to play the oppression Olympics, but like East Asians definitely are less oppressed than Black people. And so like, and so when you have that power dynamic in play and that economic power in play, like it is a lot worse coming from the Asian side than coming from the Black side.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like when I say shit like that, people rightfully get mad at me because it's like, or Asian activist people are like, well, Asians face different types of, you know, different types of oppression, all 100% true. And at the same time, and it is, I agree, the idea of like oppression Olympics, not a good thing to get into.
Productive.
But that idea of like a spectrum of who's more oppressed, we all pretty much feel it. And like, we wouldn't want to write it down probably, but we would all have the same list more or less. Like, it's very implicit in the culture.
Totally.
Like, we all know it.
Jessica Gao's resume has a much better chance of getting interviewed than Draymond Green.
Yeah. So it's like,
and we, it, for accounting, right?
Yeah. Especially if it's in finance.
So that's the thing. It's like, that's where the real nuance is, which is just like, it's hard to have this conversation because it's like, you're going to say some incorrect shit, which, you know, we've all said incorrect shit and we've all said smart shit tonight, which is like, fine. It's how you move, you know, the boulder of racism.
I want you to list all the things you think I said that was incorrect.
I got a real loss.
I'm trying to isolate that moment. Wait, what? How you move the boulder of racism
I don't know where to put it. I just know it can't stay.
Is it supposed to move? Should I move
away?
It? Is it blocking a cage?
Are we supposed to break it? Look, I don't really know exactly where the boulder of racism goes.
The exact.
But we all know what it is.
It's so rare that you can pinpoint the exact moment a metaphor gets away from a person. Oh, man.
Anyway, that's all I got.
All right. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I guess my final thoughts will piggyback on that. I feel like, you know, just riding on that same idea of, like, with call-out culture, like, I think at the end of the day, know where you're coming from. Are you coming from a point to, like, open a discussion and actually educate someone? Or are you coming from a place where you want to be right and get internet brownie points and get retweets? And, you know, I feel like that's, like, the no one wants to say that. But at the end of the day, there has been some reward. There has been reward for, like, being the first to call out someone who's bad. And at the end of the day, what is it helping? Like, you know, what are you doing? And I think a general piece of homework for anyone is try and do something to help another oppressed group. So if you're a white woman, go to a Black Lives Matter march. If you're a Black person, go to the Women's March next week. And if you're an Asian person, you get to pick which one.
Fucking
Latinos, same thing. Find one. Look, I'm making it black and white again. I don't know.
That's why we're united.
Oh, man. The color lines in this room have never been so clear.
It really is. It's stark.
My final thought is, I guess who I know who my enemy is. All right. Thank you guys so much for being on this podcast. You have plugs?
When does this drop?
Thursday.
Thursday?
Imminently.
Right, cool. Yeah, you can catch me next weekend at San Francisco Sketch Fest. I'll be doing stand-up, and my comedy group, White Women, will be doing a set called of Your Token Friend. We get a person of color to tell a story about being a token, and we do goofy improv about it. We take their struggle and make it funny.
I'm gonna be there. I guess everyone's gonna be there.
When are you? Are you going up the 27th weekend?
I'm not. I don't know. I have to check with my Jewish assistant. That's a whole episode we gotta touch on.
Man, you hit several points of nerdiness, like the anime stuff and then improv. Like,
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
If he's a gem, human gem. For me, go to listen to Yo, Is This Racist, especially this week's episode where you might hear
someone definitely will hear.
Extremely familiar to listeners of this podcast.
Dan's coming on, right?
I'm going to be on this week's Yo, Is This Racist. It's going to be a fun crossover episode.
Which is going to drop first.
Yeah. Which will drop Wednesday.
It will have been dropped.
Yeah, because you guys do
time.
Apparently just no editing.
Oh, my goodness. it's basically a live stream. Don't fuck up, gal.
Hey, I've been on your podcast before, and it was great. Most loved episode. All right. Thank you so much, guys. Goodbye, race fans.
It's a good show.